A kibble as big as a cue ball. An essay by Robert McCain. Part 1. It's a snowy morning in New England. Most of the Northeast, in fact, lies sleeping beneath this dreamy gauze of falling snow and freezing fog. It is altogether a dreamy sort of season, and when I woke on this wintry dawn, I lingered in bed musing over the dream from which I had surfaced. Not a deep dream, not a profound dream. It involved the contractor my wife and I have come to trust. In the dream, the contractor, let's call him Pete, was here to renovate the kitchen. Not only to renovate it, but somehow, as can occur only in dream, to enlarge it within the house, vastly enlarge it. Tension in the dream came from Pete's reluctance to agree to my suggestions because my wife was not here. And he knew without saying as much that any decision I might reach might well be contravened by higher authority. This provoked both of us. Me, with Pete's passive aggressiveness and refusing to agree with what I insisted we should do with the windows, which were, oddly, to look not out into the yard but into the living room, and Pete, who only longed to get on with his work. We were at loggerheads, a frustration that increased in sullen intensity until the dream cracked open, releasing me from its thraldom, its annoying pathology, and returning me to the cool dim bedroom, the familiar furniture, spouse beside me, cat curled at the foot of the bed, returning me to my real life. Awake, I reveled in my release. The kitchen wasn't about to swell like a mutant cabbage after all. But the lush distortion of my life that the dream had wrought, its compote of unpleasant dynamics, went on rankling me. To a responsible and talented workman and his respectful customers, the dream did no justice. It was, by any measure, ludicrous, a travesty, a slander. Why had my sleeping brain built such a tendentious fabrication? The dream had come flowing from some deeper dream. Perhaps unwinding the serpentine coils of that prior dream might provide a clue. Possibly, but despite my efforts, I failed to recall the earlier dream. That one, whatever it had been, was lost in the swamp. So what? What did it matter? It didn't, not in the least. But don't we love doing this, just this? The nearly irresistible urge to retrieve our dreams from the depths of gluey sleep as if they were exotic finny fishes caught in our nets, painstakingly unraveling these stories that burrow deep into our unconscious, our fears and sorrows. Like exposed sores, they require probing, surely they do, interpretation, repackaging, careful labeling and storage. We gather our counselors, those who reside in our souls, our elders and witch doctors, and those who share our waking lives, mates, friends, co-workers, be they so unfortunate, and we throw ourselves into the task, panning like 49ers the trickling streams of our dream life for flakes of gold, messages, symbols, omens. My wife tells me that early in her life she kept by her bed a dream journal, and that over time she became progressively better at recalling her dreams, writing longer entries each morning. Why do we do this? These are figments of fantasy, we all agree, warped familiars gazing in mockery at us from funhouse mirrors. No more than what Scrooge tells Marley he is, a bit of last night's underdone potato. When I came downstairs, the windows were white shrouds, the street not a street, but a crystalline meadow sweeping undisturbed to the neighbor's porch. I had no newspaper. I ate my breakfast thinking of my dream. The reluctant contractor, I called it. What do dogs make of their dreams? Or our cat, who burbles softly in the midst of some feline rapture, a jolly mouse between the paws, a kibble as big as a cue ball. We explain our dreams. We obsess over them. We weary each other with tedious narrations. We serve as sportscasters and commentators. Primitive peoples do it. PhDs do it. Interesting, yes, this compulsion of ours to drink to the dregs the meanings of our dreams. Something to do while the shrubs disappear beneath snow that sooner or later will have to be rearranged into tidy mounds by the side of the walks. Something to do while a brooding hawk shelters on a tall white pine in a neighbor's yard. Something to do while we wait longingly for April, for release from a real winter into a real spring. But this is not what draws me, this heavy industry of dream interpretation and exploitation. No, not that. What interests me is what I've come to call the production of dream. More specifically, I've become fascinated with the creators of these private Hitchcockian or Chaplinesque dramas. Who are they? Me? I'm not so sure. I have, in fact, gone on to declare this whole enterprise of dream-making the province and product of not me, but of a disreputable repertory company housed in some dormitory on the outskirts of my mind. A graveyard shift that shows up at midnight and lays its grubby paws on the controls. Yes, exactly that. I've gone to the dog's crew, if you ever saw one. Rowdy, crass, slovenly, disheveled. They do not wash, they do not shave. They belch in public, they fart. They fire up little black stogies and boyishly collect the wax from their ears with their fingernails. They put their feet up on the furniture. They slam their coffees down beside the keyboard. They spill the coffee. My wife disagrees with this characterization of my dream production. It baffles her, distresses her. It flatly appalls her, this objectification of my dream creators as if they were not I, not employees under my stewardship. And it's hard to argue, I admit. Who else, if not I, is responsible for my dreams? If dreams are a bit of underdone potato, who ate the potato? But I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Look, it says right there on their T-shirts, the dream makers. Part 2. I have come in from rearranging the snow, a good foot of the stuff, soaked through with sleet, a very moist, very clumpy, very heavy snow. Heart attack snow, I like to call this variety, as if by gently spoofing it with my witty snow taxonomy, I might co-opt it and keep it from bringing me ingloriously face down in it. An exercise in humility, rearranging snow, man against nature, in which nature scoffs lightly but menacingly. Shoveling's mindless labor, however, has afforded me an opportunity to take a step back, to reflect on the few winters that we are blessedly given. And so as I massage my stiffened fingers, I suggest that we set aside our civil argument of who these roustabouts are, scamp or saint, who seem to be in charge of answering the phones from midnight to six in our brains. And we talk instead about two preliminary things, our dreams themselves, and what I mean by production. As I heaved the snow across our yard into what queasily resemble a series of burial mounds, I decided that we might analyze dream usefully by thinking of category, setting, and plot, or story. Category seems the most elemental, but because the settings occur in all categories and plots, I think starting with setting makes more sense. Very possibly your dreams are more abstract than mine, but mine are always taking place somewhere, and those locations recur. Interiors more than exteriors, inside buildings, houses, cars, and elevators. Yes, I have city scenes and panoramas, but not as frequently. I've never had a dream in which I was mowing the grass, never a dream of waxing the car. So what are my interiors? Invariably, these are sprawling edifices, cavernous as railway stations, or many roomed with hallways that straggle off hither and yon. My dream buildings leak. Shoddy roofs are a serious motif with me. Rain pours in by the buckets. The rugs squish beneath my feet. and the wallpaper drapes in long peels from the walls. My dream rooms want a good dusting, a good airing out. They would profit from an application of Pete's carpentry talents. And if not in above-ground rooms, I find myself groping through sprawling basements, dim, dank, subterranean settings where Dante sent the bad guys. If the setting is exterior, it is often a city whose streets are a labyrinth in which I become hopelessly lost. If they are panoramas, they are almost always wastelands, ash dumps without a trace of vegetation, deeply creviced, and I am in a vehicle heading towards a precipice. If there is a plane above me, it will crash. If I am in a plane, we are worried, let me assure you. The house I spent most of my youth in shows up in my dreams, but distorted, twisted, as if a giant pair of hands had wrenched the corners in opposite directions. A third floor flat in a fire-prone triple-decker that my wife and I shared for many years shows up. Looking out the windows never reveals a quite correct view. I never know why. Sometimes in my dreams I prowl the halls of this house we have lived in now for 22 years, discovering rooms I never knew existed, used for obscure purposes I cannot fathom. Those are typical settings. What are my dream categories? Well, the first category has to be, where's the damn bathroom? I imagine this to be the most common dream we have. Everybody's got to go. Bathroom dreams find me in painful quest, threading through hallways and dungeons. When I finally do locate a bathroom, it is almost always grossly unsuitable. And that's a polite way of putting it. The rooms are squalid. The floor is sopping. The bowls, if there are bowls, walnut brown with mineral deposit. Every so often I stumble into a bathroom with windows all around. Windows? What blithering idiot, I rage, has thought to install windows in a bathroom. But in these fetid, loathsome places, what most distresses me is that the urinals or toilets I am to employ are weirdly inappropriate. Overstuffed chairs, sofas, lamps, beds. Am I really, I agonize, to pee into a chair? Another category is what I call anxiety dreams. Even though I've based the bread-earning part of my life on being in front of people, I have the very common fear of public speaking. It is, you have to admit, a peculiar thing to do, to stand in front of a bunch of strangers unarmed. In the years it took me to become comfortable before groups, I would, night after night, be plagued with anxiety dreams. In these dreams I am teaching one of my seminars. It is a normal class. Everything's going fine. Then I will squint out at my class, suddenly incredulous, to find not 10 or 20 participants, but scores and scores. How, I despair, can I entertain, even control, hundreds of people? I'm explaining something, say an esoteric grammar point, and I sense my audience drifting away, chatting, gazing into space, on their feet wandering the room. Anxiety dreams may involve my not being able to find the correct room in the morning, or going out for lunch and discovering myself halfway across some strange city with 5 minutes left of my hour and no way to get back in time, or my getting to my class only to discover I've forgotten my briefcase at the hotel. Other categories are embarrassment dreams, walking into our village center in my underpants, and fear dreams. Having come as a young man within inches of falling from a high roof, I have developed a paralyzing fear of height. In these height dreams, I am somewhere far up, clinging to a cliff or a bizarrely constructed scaffolding, with no way to get back down, a ladder having disappeared or the normal steps that I walked up, now 10 feet each and needing to be rappelled. Sometimes the steps as I am descending them atomize beneath me. Another fear dream is intruder dreams, thinking I have come awake to hear someone coming up through the house. In these dreams I try to scream, and the agonized, muffled sound I manage to issue, which really did alarm my wife when we first became a couple, is what she calls my crypt voice. There are disaster dreams airliners zooming into houses, nuclear holocaust dreams I as a 1950s child grew up and finally left off having. And then there are dreams of loss, those deeply mournful dreams of a parent or a friend gone so long, dreams of animals I have cherished and embrace and dream, waking in tears as those animals dissolve in my arms. These dreams are all, for the most part, dark. But there are bright dreams, sexual dreams. Don't we love sex dreams? Gluttony dreams, dreams of splendor, panoramas that are not desolate lunar wastelands, but meadows, green and sweet. Dreams of comfort and grace, of quiet, all-consuming, deep and compassionate love. There are prosaic dreams, business meeting dreams. From these I wake vexed, persuaded I have tarried too long in the workaday world. There are dreams that seem to possess no rhyme or reason, dreams within dreams. Once I remember a dream within a dream within a dream. Who could keep it all straight? And the stories, the plots, problems, puzzles, enjambments and entanglements, beastly frustrations, cafeterias with more food than one has ever seen, but no trays, no utensils, nowhere to sit. Vehicles whose steering wheels do not function. Thugs with knives, hornets swarming, growing as large as starlings, maggots slithering. A package with no name, a house with no number. What is wrong with this telephone? How do I get down from here? What idiocy led me to climb up here in the first place? Oh, they occupy us, these bedevilments, scare us, bewilder us, bamboozle us. We twitch, we kick our legs, we moan, we punch our poor sleeping partners. My wife smacked me a good one once. They amuse us, our dreams. They bring us awake on some unknown shore, weeping. Okay, let's talk about production. Note that I'm not using the word process. Use it if you wish, but honestly, I dislike the word. It's the kind of word we use to pretend we are saying something meaningful when we have no idea what we're talking about. The word is a brown paper bag with no lunch in it. What, on the other hand, I prize about production is that it starts us thinking right from the get-go of my disreputable repertory company, yes, but also about the fabrications themselves, the shows, the fireworks brought to us gratis every night. It's the Ed Sullivan Show twice over, a really big show, so stay tuned, folks, for some of the most exciting, most foul, most squirrely goings-on you ever did see. And it is a show. I insist on that. Do I have an unresolved conflict with my contractor? Is it edible? Is Pete a stand-in for my father? Is it my wife? And what's with these windows that would look not out into the world, but into the living room? Living room? Wow, is that anal or what? Does it have something sneakily to do with the cat? Wouldn't that be tremendous? Now, when a kitchen appears in a dream, what that really means? Fiddlesticks. None of this matters. Doesn't matter to the waking me. Doesn't matter much to the sleeping me, beyond annoying the heck out of me. Who gives a damn about the stupid kitchen? Asking dreams to be serious, asking serious questions of dreams, seems to me as pointless as asking a child why he climbs on a sled at the top of a snowy hill to glide all the way down, only to have to lug the full thing all the way back up. What's your purpose here, young fellow? Having trouble with your mother? Not that I discount dreams, not that I don't enjoy them, not that they don't sometimes scare me out of my knickers. No, no. But they're shows, movies, entertainments, the nightly follies. And by gussing them up as serious psychological stuff, we lose the simple joy with which these merry pranksters, our zany dreammakers, provide us. Our dreams don't take us seriously. Why in heaven's name should we take them seriously? Part 3. So, let's join my dream makers. It's early evening. They're outside the studio, slumped in their stepside pickups and 53 Fords. Since they are my dreammakers, they've got their radios on. Pittsburgh, 1950s. Porky Chadwick on Whammo, WAMO. Maybe somebody's trying to pull in WOWO, WOWO, Fort Wayne. A quart of beer in a brown wrapper is circulating. Somebody insists on firing up one of those infernal cigars. Somebody else has discovered in his navel some interesting pink lint. For tonight's shows, they've brought some rough notes. All of it recycled material. Maybe an unusual twist on something old. Maybe some sketchy ideas for a serious moment. But nobody here, it's important to note, is terribly worked up. Nobody's concerned with originality, with continuity of story and character. Certainly nobody cares a fig about ratings or market share. I mean, it's a tenure-track position. I didn't hire them. I can't fire them. Or can I? Or if not sack them, then maybe fuss with their feathers? Some years ago, after suffering through one anxiety dream too many, I began to question my passivity. I was sick of these dreams. Their creation did not feel collaborative or useful. You know, I'm not likely to leave my classroom and wander through a strange city searching for a restaurant, only to realize it's taking all lunchtime to get here, and I don't have a clue as how to get back. I've never done that. I'm not going to start. Nor have I ever seen a bathroom with windows all around, or peed into a chair. The settings began to seem shop-worn, the plots repetitive. Wait a minute, the sleeping me said. Wasn't I up here on this steeple just last night? For God's sakes, why am I up here again? And so I began to break these dreams. When I found myself in one of these freakish situations, I began kvetching. Is this a dream? This isn't real, is it? And I began to devise tests to ascertain just that. It upset my dreammakers. You bet it did. While they protested that this indeed was real, that I was at this very moment walking into the village center, having forgotten to put on my pants. Feel the cool wind against your thighs, they'd say, conjuring up that sensation. Listen to your naked soles slapping on the pavement. Sense your mounting chagrin. When this happened, I would call their bluff. If this is real, I would answer, then I cannot, for instance, fly, can I? No, I can't fly. I know I can't fly. So if this is real, and I am actually in public in my underpants, then I will not be able to fly if I try. But if it's a dream, then maybe I can. And I do. Perhaps my flights are not as graceful as that of the cardinals in our snowy landscape. But I will rise an inch, 2 inches, a foot, 2 feet, and then, cackling in glee, I am shooting up into the sky with the dream abandoned in pieces below. Or I will ask, if this is a dream, I should not be able to sink my fist through this brick wall, should I? I can't do that in real life. I'd destroy every bone in my hand. And when my fist travels through the bricks, pulverizing them, I will shout out in triumph. I call it breaking the dream. You might call it deauthorizing the dream, disempowering it, neutering it, desacralizing it. And don't get me wrong, I don't hate my dreammakers. I can enjoy their productions, but I don't like being victimized by them. Especially, I do not like being subjected to slapdash writing and cheap production values. If all they've done is call over to central casting for their staffing requirements, then I reserve the right to break the dream, and I damn well do. Part 4. We're going to end with a dream, a scrap. First, a little background. My best friend from the years of 10 or so through high school, let's call him Richard, settled his adolescent hash and established himself in his 20s long before I did. Richard and I had lost track of each other by then, but I knew he had found a vocation working with engines, which had always fascinated him, and he had found a good woman and started a family. He had built them a beautiful home. In his early 30s, he contracted leukemia. He went through intensive treatment and seemed to be doing well in remission. It was then that a mutual friend put us back in touch, and I spent a long and funny evening reminiscing with him. Within a year, the leukemia took him, quite suddenly. I never remember dreaming about Richard before his death. Since he had been my boon boyhood companion, I have to believe that he occasionally found his way into my young dreams. But I don't recollect that. It was certainly nothing I ever remarked upon. But with his death, Richard became, and has continued to be, a regular visitor to my dreams. Months may pass between his appearances. I worry that I have finally seen the end of him. But there again he will be. Maybe both of us return to boys, maybe young adults. Richard, I will think. Good to see you. Last night, with our old house creaking under its burden of snow, Richard appeared in my dream, near the close of some story that had nothing to do with him. In the dream, Richard was in a chair, a sort of exaggerated wing-back chair. The sides of the chair closed fully around him, and he appeared to be pressed back into it. The effect was coffin-like, and it disturbed me. His face had spread, flattened, as faces will sometimes do in coffins. But it was the topography of Richard's face that was most arresting. His face was a mesh of fine wrinkles, thousands upon thousands of wrinkles. He was distressed, too, even more than I. He appealed to me from within his chair, asking, "Have I grown old?" There are madmen inside us, fatheads and cowards. Inmates slip from their cells. My dreammakers recently held a yard sale. Out of nowhere, two hooligans showed up and started hurling the chairs and desks into the street. This dream of Richard I will take seriously. I woke before I could answer him. But as I lay in my familiar surroundings, having now, for reasons known only to fate, succeeded in living into my 60s, I thought of my old chum, of our nutty adventures, and of his confident and swift maturation into adulthood that so astonished me. I had always been the more mature one, the one who knew his place in the world. Richard adored his wife. He adored his daughter. He described to me the night I met with him, sitting on the ridge of the house he had just built for his family, having learned that he had contracted a disease that might kill him. This, he told me, waving his arm at the living room he was so proud of, doesn't mean anything. What my dream makers are trying to do, I believe, and I give them credit for this, was answer, or if not answer, at least confront the two central mysteries of our lives. Why do we live, and why do we die? As I pulled back the covers, preparing to get up and put on my pants and enter into my day, I formulated my answer to Richard. No, Richard, you have not grown old. Copyright 2015. Robert A. McCain.